Hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Two local reservoirs are nearly full of storm water. So what happens if we get more rain? We hear about the area's deep tunnel reservoirs and how they work.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest, and those of us in this struggle have not rested.
And the long-awaited groundbreaking for a memorial that honors survivors of police torture. First off tonight, embattled Chicago U.S. Attorney Andrew Boutros is back in court and on the hot seat. Magistrate Judge Laura McNally says Boutros violated a court order when he openly discussed a gang murder case while it remained under seal. Boutros spoke about the case at a news conference last week and says he believed at that time that the case either was being unsealed or had already been unsealed. The U.S. attorney had asked the judge to strike today's hearing, saying he was acting in, quote, good faith and no harm had been done to a defendant or law enforcement. McNally denied that request, ordering Boutros to appear in order to, quote, remind leadership, including you, that unsealing orders must be scrupulously followed. However, the judge did make clear that there would be no further investigations, sanctions, or consequences for Boutros related to this. And there are more details on the case that Boutros was discussing on our website. Republican state lawmakers are calling for accountability and stronger ethics reforms after two state lawmakers were accused of misconduct. Yesterday, a federal grand jury indicted Democratic State Representative Carol Ammons, accusing her of orchestrating a scheme to receive illegal cash kickbacks from local nonprofits she helped secure state grant funding for. And last week, Democratic State Representative Harry Benton resigned after an ethics investigation reportedly about allegations of sexual harassment. Republicans are now calling for the report detailing Benton's conduct to be released to the public and for Illinois House Speaker Emanuel Chris Welch to formally ask Ammons to resign. Immigrant rights activists are sounding the alarm over a recent uptick in ICE activity in Chicago and around the country. Advocates say Operation Midway Blitz, that's the federal immigration enforcement that roiled Chicago area neighborhoods last fall, is far from over.
Today, months later, we are standing here again because we are seeing a surge in ICE activity here in back of the yards, in surrounding neighborhoods, and across the Chicagoland area. Despite claims that Operation Midway Blitz has ended, it is not over. Our communities continue to feel the impact.
ICE arrests surged at the end of June with over 10,000 reported across a five-day period. In Chicago, 21 people were detained by ICE last week, and 17 people have been detained this week, according to the Little Village-based community group in Lacey, Chicago. Some Chicago teens received a history lesson today from the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Suffs about the fight for women's rights to vote. And one of the Suffs is Chicago civil rights crusader and journalist Ida B. Wells. Today, teens from the girls' leadership nonprofit Girls, Inc. heard from both the actress who plays Wells in the limited-time Chicago production, as well as Wells' great-granddaughter, who is also a journalist. In the former building of the Chicago Bee, which is the newspaper where Wells was an editor, students learned about how pioneering it was for black women at the time to fight for the right to vote.
How black women during that movement were sidelined, were told to stand back. We're told that you can come, but you can't really be included. And what we also don't learn in school is how prevalent black women were during the suffragist movement.
And that might not seem significant today, but if you really think about the fact that she was born into slavery, and then she, you know, fast forward, you know, 40 years later, she's fighting for the right to vote, to have a voice in our democracy.
Suffs is in Chicago at the CIBC Theater until July 19th. Up next, we explain the Chicago area's overtaxed stormwater reservoir system right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Thank you.
The Chicago region is drying out this week after being pounded by heavy rainfall over the weekend, and it's probably needed. More than 7 billion gallons of water flowed into Thornton Reservoir in south suburban Cook County, putting it at nearly capacity. And in southwestern Cook County, the McCook Reservoir captured more than 3 billion gallons. They're both part of the region's tunnel and reservoir plan, also known as TARP, or the Deep Tunnel. And they add a critical backstop for stormwater management in Cook County. Here to help us understand how it all works are John Murray, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, and Tessa Murray, no relation, Watershed Policy Manager at Friends of the Chicago River. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
John, give us a sense of how much water these reservoirs hold. What does 7 billion gallons of water look like?
Well, 7 billion gallons of water looks like about, I'm going to go with 13 billion gallons, since we had 13 billion gallons that we collected, and that's nearly 20,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools is what that looks
just
like.
20,000.
Just 20,000.
Mm-hmm. Is this capacity enough to, like, what we have? Do we have enough capacity to keep up with what, you know, these historically heavy rains that we've been seeing due to climate change?
Well, at the current time, we are drying down the reservoirs, and we're getting about 600 to 700 million gallons a day out of the reservoir system. And that storage becomes immediately available for the next storm that comes in. But we are going to be at a level, we're going to have water in the system for a number of weeks while we dewater.
So that means if we should get more water over the next few weeks.
There is storage that's becoming available as we speak, as we continue to dewater the reservoir.
Okay, so then it'll depend on how much water, whether or not we're in a near capacity situation.
Well, we're still in a near capacity situation, but we're starting to pump down the reservoirs. And so as each day goes by without any rain, we'll get closer and closer to emptying the reservoirs. In the meantime, as we dewater, there'll be space available to take on water.
Okay, so we're getting there.
We're getting it.
Okay. Explain for us, if you would, you know, how and why streets and basements still flood despite, you know, having these reservoirs.
Well, so we've seen incredible rain events that have happened over the past couple of years. If we recall, in July of 2023, there was a very large storm event that dropped an incredible amount of water in a very short period of time. And what happens is that water is unable to make its way through the local sewer system and to make its way to our system. And so that is even if we have capacity in our system, that occurs. So when the water can't get out of the system, then there's a potential for basement backups.
Okay, so the rain is coming down and filling up the sewage system faster than it can make it to you.
Correct.
Okay. Tessa, why is stormwater management important for the health of local waterways, rivers?
Right. Stormwater management is pertinent to the health and the water quality of the Chicago Calumet River system because we actually have a combined sewer system here in the Chicago region, meaning the water that's entering into the deep tunnel system that we're talking about is not just rainwater, but also wastewater from people's homes, businesses. So that's the water from your sink, from your toilets. And when the system becomes overwhelmed during heavy storms like we're talking about, there is also a chance that some will enter into the river system. So that means raw sewage entering into our precious waterways.
What happens when raw sewage enters, when that happens?
Yes, so first of all, it is hazardous for humans that recreate on the water. So people who kayak, canoe, fishing, you're at a higher risk of receiving any impact from pathogens that could be in the water if you come into contact with that water after a CSO or a combined sewer overflow has occurred. It's also really impactful for our aquatic habitat. So we have seen there was a combined sewer overflow in the Bubbly Creek area just a few weeks ago, and we did unfortunately see a large fish die off. Fish had risen to the surface of the water there as a result of the combined sewer overflow.
Yeah, you said it was a large die-off. How much fish?
There were at least 100 fish floating to the top of the river. So, and of course, the Chicago Calumet River system, we're seeing a lot more fish than we have in years past because we are getting better with the health of the river system, but these combined sewer overflows could really set us back.
John, what happens if a reservoir does fill up and then there's more rain on the way?
So what will happen is if there's not capacity in our system is that the water likely, there'll be more of an increase of a sewer overflow into area waterways. And if I could just add a little bit more, The TARP system, the deep tunnel system, has just simply been amazing. As Tessa mentioned, when we look at the number of fish species that are now in the area waterway system, we've gone from 7 or 8 in the 70s to well over 70 now. And that's a testament to the success of the deep tunnel system. And we've also had hundreds of millions of dollars in flood reduction benefits also. So it works in tandem. We try to prevent sewer overflows as much as we can.
So it does important work. It gets tricky, of course, with, I guess I'd like to know a little bit more, if you can, about the impact of climate change. If we're getting more and more rain and more storms, we're pushing the ability of the TARP system.
We're pushing the ability of all of our systems through climate change. And so what we've seen this year from January 1st until now, from our McCook TARP system, that's is dewatered at the Stickney plant, and that plant covers central Chicago and communities in that area. This year, just from the TARP pumping that we've done, the TARP collection that we've done, over 34 billion gallons of water so far this year. Compared to last year at the same time period, it's about double from what we had last year. So it's considerable. And that storm that we talked about in 2023, that is a direct indicator that climate change is a real thing that's not going away. It appears to only be getting more severe.
Right, because I think we heard from someone earlier this week, I think the Chicago Department of Water Management, that over the weekend of the 4th, we got as much rain that weekend alone as we would typically get in the month of July.
That's correct. And it's as much rain I think we had more rain in June than we normally get in June and July.
Tessa, how does flood risk change with the seasons?
So when I think about flood risk for the Chicago River system, I'm thinking about the combined sewer overflows. And that really is more likely to occur in the summertime when there's a larger, heavy rainstorms and more intense rainstorms. But combined sewer overflows are a risk all year round. There was one earlier this winter in the beginning of January, so there was some snow melt happening at the same time that there was some inclement rainwater going through, and so we did see a combined sewer overflow then. So it always could be an issue, I'd say.
Right. Tell us, Tessa, what more can you tell us about the overflow action day alerts?
Yeah, so Friends of the Chicago River initiated overflow action days around 10 years ago, and this is a way for all Chicago region community members to get involved in reducing the risk of combined sewer overflows. So when we know that there's heavy rain in the forecast, and now MWRD is the one who really triggers those alerts for us because they loop it into whether or not the TARP system is at capacity, we'll send out an alert and it'll advise people to use less water use if they can in their home. So maybe delay taking a shower, forgo your chores like dishwashing and laundry for a little bit, maybe flush your toilet a little bit less, because that can really help reduce the amount of water into the system, since again, it is a combined sewer system here.
John, how does MWRD, how do you manage concerns about the odors that residents might experience near a reservoir?
So we're there, we have a Thornton Reservoir that's located in Thornton. And there, when we first put the reservoir in service in 2015, there were a number of issues with odors. And so we added some additional aerators a couple years after that. And then we still had different issues. So we had public meetings, we worked with the municipalities in that area, and we developed two projects that are going to be in service by the end of this year that we know will help address the odor issue in that area. And we've also made some operational challenges. One of the greatest challenges for the district is that none of this infrastructure exists anywhere else in the world. And so we're learning too how to deal with some of these issues also.
Okay.
We also take the odor issue very seriously. That's a quality of life impact. And so we try to stay on top of
residents who live near there are appreciative of your efforts to address that when you're able to. John Murray, Tessa Murray, no relation. Thanks to you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, honoring survivors of police violence. We'll be right back. This week, Chicago made good on an 11-year-old promise to survivors of police torture. From 1971 to 1992, former police commander John Burge and officers under his command tortured more than 100 black men, women, and children on Chicago's South Side to coerce confessions. In 2015, City Council approved a reparations package that included a permanent memorial acknowledging and remembering the experiences of the survivors. Yesterday, construction finally began on that long-awaited memorial in Washington Park. It is the first state-sponsored monument in the U.S. to commemorate law enforcement violence. Joining us to talk more about the groundbreaking and what's next are Anthony Holmes, survivor, reparations recipient, and vice president of the Chicago Torture Justice Memorials Foundation, Joey Mogul, co-founder and president of the Chicago Torture Justice Memorials Foundation, and Aislinn Pulley, executive director of the Chicago Torture Justice Center. Welcome back to the three of you. Thank you for joining us. Congratulations on getting to this point.
Thank you.
So I want to start with you all and find out, you know, sort of what the last 11 years, you know, what it's been like and how you're feeling now that construction has finally gotten started on this. Anthony, I want to start with you first, please.
It's a relief that we finally, you know, got somebody in that would help us, because we've been going through a lot of changes, but none of the mayors proved true to help us, except for Johnson. Him and the Alderman lady, they invited us in, helped us and stuff, so they started the motion. He said he was gonna help us, and he did. He come true on his word. From June 10th of last year to then, he stepped out, and that's why we're here now, to speak on that.
Joey, I remember when this reparations package was passed back in 2015, interviewing you then and learning about all of this. How do you feel now that construction has finally started?
Well, it's glorious. It's truly a joyous occasion. We are thrilled and excited, and it's been too long coming. You know, reparations legislation got passed, and we immediately went into implementing the reparations legislation. And we did work with the Emanuel administration to do so, but they would not have any full and fair conversations truly about this memorial. And it's been truly frustrating to try to get this memorial built. While we have done the hard work of talking with the survivors and family members, getting their input, doing charrettes, coming up with the design, we really haven't had partners in the city who are willing to work with us. There were members of the Lightfoot administration who did support us, but unfortunately we just did not get the rhythm to build it. So we are so grateful to Mayor Johnson and his administration for working with us to make this dream a reality. We're also so grateful to Alderwoman Taylor. She's the only person who, Alderwoman on the South Side, who would allow us to build within her ward. And it was very important when we talked to survivors and family members, they all said they wanted the memorial on the South Side of Chicago, because that's where they lived, and that's where they were tortured, and that's where they thought it was fitting to be built. So it meant so much to us to have Alderman Taylor come through and have it, let us go through a process so it could be built in her ward.
Anthony, you're one of the first survivors of the Burge torture era.
Yes.
You testified during his trial, which was not about torture, actually. It was about something else related. After, you know, decades of people not believing you and the other survivors and your experiences, why do you think a physical memorial is important to include?
The memorial to me is our truth. It expresses everything that took place with us, that the state, that the city did to us through the corrupt officers. And the sad part about it is, then nobody wanted to believe us when we was telling them this here. And through all of it, we got pushed down, pushed away, and then finally, the lawyers and stuff, they got to the memorial, reparations built, and moved from there. Went to the UN, and that was thanks to Joey and them, you know what I'm saying?
Joey and them.
Yep. They did, I'm telling you, they helped us, because didn't nobody want to help us, period, because we supposed to be crooks and all this stuff, but that's not the point. The point is, what they did to us was wrong, and that's the point. And you know, if I do something wrong, I ain't got no problem about, you know, going to jail for it. But don't put me in there for something I didn't do. You know, but that's not the point. The point is that all of us, the ones that was, you know, maybe some of us had cases and stuff that was true, but the majority of us didn't. They just locked us up because Dilley wanted us locked up. And through it all, thanks to them, and now y'all helping us, and Mayor and them, they stretched out, and that in itself relieved and give us more hope, you know, to continue on and doing what we're doing, and then we're trying to help.
Aislinn, one of the other things that was included in this reparations package was, of course, the center that you run now, the Chicago Torture Justice Center, counseling center for survivors and families, which opened in 2017. How's that center been helping with the ongoing trauma that survivors experience and their families?
It's been really incredible. What we've seen is, you know, we're the first and the only center in the country that's dedicated to treating survivors of domestic torture. And we've learned so much from survivors like Anthony and from attorneys like Joey and from organizers who have taught us about the perseverance through the pain. And what we're realizing is that there's a slew of walking wounded people who have experienced and gone through the criminal legal system, just like Anthony has, and just like the mothers who have been fighting for their loved ones to be released have. And so there's a slew of the population who has been ignored for decades and perhaps for centuries, and whose pain and traumas have been rendered really invisible. And so now we're at the precipice of really forging a new part of the field of psychiatry and psychology that connects not just wellness and healing in the abstract, but within the reality and within the confines of understanding what it means when a society hurts and harms.
As we mentioned, you know, in our lead, there's the narrative that only men were tortured, but there were women as well.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Clarify that.
No, absolutely. We don't know of as many women. And to be honest with you, because the Chicago Police Department and the Cook County State's Attorney's Office never fully did an investigation, we may not know of every single survivor who was impacted by Burge and the men under his command. But we absolutely know that there were Black women who were tortured and interrogated by Burge and his henchmen at Area 2 and 3 police headquarters. So we have always said it's been men and women and children, and that is a very important part of this story.
Joey, the design of the memorial, it's titled Breath, Form, and Freedom. Tell us more about the inspiration and what people will see at this memorial when it's completed.
Well, the original concept for the design was by Patricia Nguyen and John Lee. And they had sort of based it on the feedback that we had solicited from survivors and their family members. And so there's a spiral, and it has to do with the Zapatista corcorals, as well as sort of the inverse of the panopticon, which is the way, you know, the system, the way prisons use to surveil everyone. So it's sort of the inverse of that. But then we really worked with John Gay, who's our architect, and he also spoke with survivors as well, including Stanley Howard, and how Stanley Howard described how he was like sucked into the vortex of the criminal legal system and then spit out. So there will be certain pathways that come from it. So literally, as you can see, it's a concrete structure. We have a timeline that tells the story of the racist pattern and practice of torture, as well as the decades-long struggle for justice by organizers, by attorneys, by independent journalism, that culminated in the historic passage of the reparations legislation. And then beyond that, you know, where the survivors and family members were often denied and dismissed, we will have their voices, their sayings etched into the ground near the memorial. So it's an expression of them, you know, the reverse of what's been happening to them.
Sounds like it'll be a very moving memorial when the time comes, expected to open in early 2027. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank the three of you and congrats to all of you, Joey Mogul, Anthony Holmes, Aislinn Pulley. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Reflecting the people and perspectives that make up our communities, this story is part of Chicago Tonight. Black Voices.
And that's our show for this Thursday night. If you're making weekend plans but need some inspiration, check out our website for our Chicago Summer Festival Guide. You can find it at wttw.com/festivals. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the Week in Review. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that contributes to public safety policy and guidelines.